Our show's name pays tribute to the Boer Trekkers of South Africa, who in 1838 soundly defeated 30,000 Zulus on the bank of the Nkomo River, thereafter called Blood River, from the water turning red with the blood of the slain. Miraculously, no Boer Trekker died and only three were wounded. Now, your friend, Eddie Miller, will be your ambassador for tonight's show.
Okay, people, we're right back. And we're going to let Jacob ask a few questions and then let him go for the night. But I've got a million questions, and I've been anxious to get into the meat of this video with all about the seismic recordings at the University of Oklahoma in the video itself. But before we go, Jacob, would you like to ask a few questions to Pat?
Yeah, sure. It's great to be on with you tonight, Pat. It's been a while since we talked, and just great honor for me. And I believe this is a first for you and I being on air at the same time. I'm used to listening to your interviews and hearing you talk, so it's pretty exciting for me as a young whippersnapper to to be on air with you right now. But the question I wanted to throw at you was at. And maybe you were going to get into this later on in the show anyway, so I'm sure you were, but I know for a lot of people, you know, they're always like, they're really quick to say, well, why are we talking about this old news? You know, this happened way back when, you know, back in the 90s, you know, why are we still talking about this? And the basic answer for that, the short answer for that would be right in the title of the documentary itself, you know, where you which is the forerunner of 9/11. And so yep. The question I would bounce off of you, and I think it would kind of help inform folks as we go along here tonight too. It's just how, in a you know synopsis sort of way, and then if you were going to talk about it some more later on too, maybe you could elaborate that on that a bit. But in a you know overview type format, can you explain to the audience how exactly the Oklahoma City bombing paved the way for the much more contemporary, for you know any of the younger folks who might be listening to this tonight, example of government-sponsored terrorism we have in the attack on 9/11?
Well, it was kind of proving grounds for the government. They were finding out what they could get away with and what they had to do to cover up. And I think that it was a great spring training before the Major League Baseball season took off. I mean, it was certainly well organized, and you know we must remember that we've only learned this in the last couple of years. But a couple of years ago, now it was that the Cody Snodgrass. I'm just trying to pull up his name here. Cody Snodgrass went public on YouTube. You will remember where he had turned down a $1 million offer. The year before, in the fall of 94, he had been offered $1 million. He was a CIA operative. He was, you know, one of the bad guys, and he turned it down because he didn't want to be doing that sort of thing within the United States, in his homeland. And he was never reluctant, as most of them are, you know, to do it overseas. I remember Russell Bowen, who was CIA the day it was born. He was '47, when the CIA was born, he was one of the first pilots to sign up. He flew the murderous crew into Iran when they killed the Shah in '53. He was the pilot, and that's a whole different story. But what I'm getting to is that he became a whistleblower too, because when he was flying his second load of cocaine from Colombia into Texas into the United States, he began to have a conscience and to realize, he said, now I'm drugging my own kids. And he called the when he got a landline into Texas, he called the sheriff in Sylvania, Georgia, to say that he was flying in, he had a load of cocaine, he was ready to name names and tell the story. He had a twin engine aircraft. But by the time he got to Georgia from Texas and he landed on a strip, there was the DEA jet that he recognized from Homestead Air Force Base in Miami waiting for him. The sheriff had called him, and he was going to blow the whistle on George Bush and a whole bunch, and instead they hauled him off to Springfield and kept him there for 6 years and put him under mind-erasing drugs and this sort of stuff. But that's, as I say, it's a whole different story. But some of these guys do have a conscience. Most of them don't get one until they're retired. their pension is too good, their salary is too good right now, the pension they're looking forward to is something that they can't give up. That's how these FBI guys, so many of them, go along with the plan. And yet the FBI has only been corrupt at the top. It's the leadership that these guys have to do what they're told, or they lose their high-paying jobs and their pensions. And that's why most of them go along. The root of all this goes back to December 23rd, 1913, when they got the Federal Reserve Act passed. When they got the ability to create money at will, to do anything they want with it, then basically the game was only a matter of time before being over. So back to your question, they found out what they could get away with in Oklahoma City, and they found out what more they had to do. This is why they moved the trial out of Oklahoma. Too many people were wising up. I was mentioning Ben Parton, who had gone public with the bombs being on the inside of the building. He could see that from news magazines. You and I couldn't, but he could. And he, on his own nickel, came to Oklahoma City and sat down with the fire chiefs and looked at some more and more pictures. And he saw where there was a fourth. He had already spotted where there were three bombs set at the third floor level right over the children's nursery. And the columns had been surrounded with the wrap, you know, with the rope. And that's why he was explaining, if you split a pencil in half, you can see how it shatters. But when you put these kind of charges around a column, it looks like it was sawn through. And that's what the columns he showed me, he pointed out to me, that, you know, how clean they were. And also, the columns in the rear center of the building were taken out, and the explosive damage was far more severe in that left-hand thing you see in the picture where it's blown out. Those columns were sawn, but those in front where the alleged ANFO bomb was supposed to be were not even as damaged as the one in the back. So obviously it was not ANFO. We interviewed a foreman. He's on the video. I mentioned this on the video. Jim Ferguson, I think, was his name. He was on the scene in 3 minutes. He was working in the courthouse behind the Murrah building. He was on the scene in 3 minutes and was rescuing. There, no one was wearing a gas mask, but the two things that we need to know, and it's on the video, about ANFO, ammonium nitrate fuel oil, it's just very poisonous. You can't go near an ANFO explosion for an hour or so until the wind dissipates the poison. And it leaves grains, like rice-sized grains, on the street. There was no evidence of ANFO on the street, and of course there was no one was wearing a gas mask during the rescue. So that pretty much for Ben Parton did away with the ANFO being responsible. Tim McVeigh, of course, was a patsy from the beginning, just like Oswald was in '63. His job was still, he had resigned from the Army, his story was that he missed being a Green Beret, and so he wanted to get out. But they never quit paying him. He was still on the payroll until he allegedly died in 01, and that's in my new article also, how they were very well could have even faked the execution. You know, it's a lot easier to fake a needle poisoning than it is to hang.
Pat, I hear the music. We got to go to a break. Right. And when we come back, I've got to ask you a few questions myself about it. We'll be right back, people. Just hang on to your seats. We're going to get back into this, the 24th anniversary of the Oklahoma City bombing. Be right back.
Liberty is not free. Its costs are innumerable. Without monetary funding, the valiant efforts of freedom-loving Americans become diminished or outright defeated. We present a solution, the Give Me Liberty Fund. The plan is quite simple. Invite individual Americans to contribute less than a dollar a day. These monetary funds are used to promote liberty-minded media, organizations, events, candidates, movements, and speakers. In the spirit of transparency, all expenditures are published. Patriotic business owners provide discounted products and services to Give Me Liberty Fund members. Our greatest strength is in numbers. Go to GiveMeLibertyFund.com and become part of the solution today. GiveMeLibertyFund.com. Participate in the peaceful restoration of the greatest and freest country in the world.
We'll be right back. Hey, this is Matt from Blood River Radio. Blood River Radio is your voice to save our land, our people, and our future. We propose Christian solutions to an anti-Christian assault on our bloodlines. We love what we do, but we cannot do it without your help. The annual operating cost of Blood River Radio is more than even a team of people should bear alone. With your donation, we can take the fight to our enemies and hold our own people accountable for their treachery against us. Please go to our website, www.bloodriverradio.com, and find a way to help us that is suitable for you. We are thankful for any cash, check, or money orders we get. We also appreciate your correspondence or letters of encouragement. Once again, please help, and thank you for joining the fight.
Kosher. Certified. Put the two words together to get Kosher-tified, which is spelled with an S-E-H instead of just S-H. It's the right way to spell this, the German way, and it made it easier to trademark. Now, did I tell you that the letters S-C-H still make the shh sound, as in all those American food producers saying, shh, let's keep it really quiet that our product is kosher certified? Think about it. Nearly one century of kosher certification, and hardly anyone outside exclusive observers knows that most packaged food and kitchen products are literally certified by religious intermediaries. Well, because you, consumer, are indirectly paying for this, the Kosher-tified app is here to make kosher certification awareness an inclusive matter for people of all faiths and identities. And it even boasts a unique database of products not kosher certified. We call that NKC. Start memeing it. It's fun. NKC, not kosher certified. Now, to confuse our audience even more, we put a question mark at the end of our name, and that really cinched our trademark approval. It relates to the website where you can begin your new shopping behavior, thekosherquestion.com.
Go ahead. My day.
Well, people, we're right back to this interview. And before we go back to our guest, I'm going to tell you our guests have been talking about General Parton. I would highly encourage you to go in the internet and pull up General Parton's resume. You would not believe how brilliant that guy is. His resume probably is two typewritten pages. Now, with that said, I would like to ask our guests a couple of questions about, we talk about the Oklahoma City bombing. We haven't really talked a whole lot about the bombing. For instance, the two seismic signatures that were recorded at the University of Oklahoma, they showed two explosions.
Right.
That's one question. If you will, keep this in your, I'm going to ask three questions in one. If you forget to answer them, I'll come back to them. Also, and the FBI, shortly after the bombing, before I even get there, where were the DEA agents? Why were none of the DEA agents in, and none of the government agents in that building that day? Why were none of their children in the nursery that day? Where were they? Why none there? Why were they seen around the building immediately after the explosion went? They weren't in the building, but they were a short distance away from the building. Also, what were in the file cabinets the FBI were seen taking out of that building shortly afterwards? Could it be Whitewater documents, documents left over from the prosecution of the Rose Law Firm, the Whitewater, et cetera, et cetera? What about John Doe number two? I hope I'm not giving you too much. Was John Doe number two, could he have been an FBI agent? And lastly, hoping I'm not ask you too much, who was the guy who was executed? He was associated with Andy Strassmeyer, Kennedy and Kennedy Trinidad, and the guy who was executed, we can't remember his name. I hope it's not too much. So let's get back to the explosion, the two seismic recordings recorded at the University of Oklahoma by the eminent scientist there, and the cabinets removed from the building. And after those, we'll go to some more questions.
Well, that's pretty much explained on the video. Yes, we interviewed two separate of the seismologists, or whatever how you pronounce that, about the bombing. And of course, they both explained that there were two definite incidents, as they call it, that were approximately 10 seconds apart. This would probably have to do with what we call the pineapple bomb, and I don't really have the time nor the knowledge to go into the details of that, but it's pretty well explained on the video, as you saw. And the final consensus was that the pineapple bomb was in the truck, and it was what exploded as a diversionary tactic, and in some way triggered the announcement to whoever's got the button in his hand to set off the bombs on the inside. Now, that's, you know, that's just an opinion, but we know it certainly was not ANFO. You mentioned DEA, but you actually mean ATF. It was the ATF offices that were on the ninth floor, and no one was there. They had a golf tournament. They many of them were on the golf course that morning. They went out there about 7 or 8 o'clock, and they said it was like a inner office, a golf tournament or something. And on a Wednesday, yeah, give me a break. But nevertheless, as you know, and learned from the video, that a few dozen identified by their BATF jackets that they were wearing, they showed up immediately. I mean, we're talking about a minute or two after the bombing. This this reporter, Brad Edwards, who later lost his job because he was a truth seeker, but Brad Edwards cornered this guy wearing an ATF jacket down there on the street, and he said, "Hey, why are you here? Why are you alive?" And he said, "Oh, we received a notice not to come in today." And there was no way to erase that from the record. Once that mule was out of the barn, and I used to tell people, I haven't in the last few years, and I'll explain that in a minute, but I used to tell people, especially after the Oklahoma City incident, that if you want to know what happened on any big thing that the government pulls off, just listen to the early news reports. Listen to the reporters on the street. And as you know, the first couple of hours, 2 or 3 hours, it was a truck bomb. First they thought it was a gas explosion, and then when they received orders a couple of hours later from somewhere up the line, they had to change their stories. But first it was a gas explosion, and then the reporters began to truthfully announce that no, the bomb squad was there, and they'd hauled away a couple of unexploded bombs, and they were even bigger than the ones that went off. I don't know how they could know that, but that's what they were saying. Then, about noontime, well, also about 10:30, less than an hour and a half after the bombings, the FBI comes in and shuts down the rescue. Now, here are people are being pulled out. They're pinned by their arms or legs and body under rocks and debris and alive and talking to the rescuers, and suddenly the rescuers are called away. And nobody could figure out later how many people died during that interval when the FBI decided that the file cabinets upstairs were more important than dying people. They also, during that interlude, removed the surveillance camera from the Southwest 5th Street. They were across the street and were zoomed right in on the Murrah building and where the truck allegedly was. If we had a truck bomb, how was the truck totally demolished? Not more than demolished. It disappeared. It evaporated. Now, you know, they said that the engine block was, I mean, the piece that was found down the street is allegedly
the axle.
Pardon?
The axle.
Yeah,
the axle, wasn't it?
Down the street, and they claimed that they had a serial number on it. And that's how they identified the truck. Well, Ted Gunderson had the foresight to go to, I think it was Dodge or Ford, and check out, and they found out that that year they didn't manufacture any serial numbers on the axles. But even if they did find an axle that came from that truck, what in the heck happened to the rest? Well, where's the engine block? You know, where's all the rest of that truck? We're talking about something that it would take an atom bomb to dissipate. it was a whole big lie from the start. And by the way, the official story about noontime started out being a car bomb, and it was 500 pounds. And this is on the radio. And I'm listening in Jackson, Mississippi to all this, and it's 500 pounds, and then it becomes 1,000, and then 1,500. What they're discovering, you see, there was so much damage that they began to realize that it was impossible for a little old ANFO bomb to have wreaked this kind of havoc. So they kept increasing the size of it, and finally they had to move it from a car to a truck because no car was big enough to hold as much demolition. So it was, it just became ridiculous. So my advice for years was, listen to the reporters on the street. Anytime there's a big national tragedy, listen to what the honest street reporters are telling us, because they're telling us the truth. But that's not even true anymore, Eddie, because the way the, we've noticed the false flags in the last 2 years, they've already got their official story set up. They've already got their reporters up with the fed the story that they want us to hear. So,
hey, Pat, sort of thing, last I heard it, now it's a trainload of info. Now I heard it was a trainload. I'm sorry. Go. I didn't want to. That was kind of funny there. But go right back to what you were talking about. You mentioned earlier, I think, a guy by the name of Michael. Did you mention Michael Hinton, or am I just reading your mind? The lobbyist. He was a lobbyist from England who spent 22 years in the United States in law enforcement. Remember, he rode a bus. He was there. He was the one. Correct me if I'm wrong, Pat. Michael Hinton, the lobbyist. He was working with the lobbyist with the guy from Texas who was running for president a long time ago. And he was riding a bus there. He on April the 12th, if I'm not mistaken, 1 week before the bombing, he saw all these people out in front of the federal building. He thought it was a fire drill or something, but he found out that the federal officials, the newspaper, the news media, and all the people in the federal building had a bombing threat called in. But listen, we'll go right back to this question a few more, and we're going to bring Jacob in again pretty soon. People, hang on to your hat. We're going right back to this interview.
Exposing corruption, informing citizens, pursuing liberty. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
USA Radio News with Rick Vincent.
North Korea on Saturday issued a relatively mild criticism of White House National Security Advisor John Bolton for calling on North Korea to show more evidence of its disarmament commitment before a possible third leader summit. That follows a demand earlier in the week that Secretary of State Mike Pompeo be removed from the nuclear negotiations. But retired General Jack Heen tells Fox News North Korea's leader still hopes to have sanctions relieved by President Trump at a summit.
They're not going to go into a third summit without preparation at lower levels and stress test the North Koreans' position so that they actually put a weapon on the table in terms of denuclearization, either missiles or nuclear weapons, something they have not done to date, and that's what the administration wants to see.
Keen saying North Korea is still avoiding directing harsh rhetoric toward the U.S. or directly criticizing President Trump in an apparent effort to keep diplomacy alive. This is USA Radio News.
It's amazing but true. When it comes to one of America's biggest household expenditures, health care, a lot of people think they've got no choice. People are used to thinking we have to do it this way, but they don't. Yes, you have the freedom to choose an alternative with your health care. It's MediShare, and it costs way less than the alternatives. The typical family saves $500 a month, not a year. A month. And if you're single, this can save you a lot too. And let's face it, a big reason MediShare is 400,000 people strong, it just works. They've shared over $3 billion in medical bills, so they can help share your needs too. Joining MediShare for so many people is one of those things that makes you say, why didn't I do this before? So yes, the time has come for something better. Look into joining MediShare and see why so many people are opting out of the old way and into the new. Why not look into this? Just call 855-90-PSALM. That's 855-90-PSALM. 855-90-PSALM.
Former Kansas Secretary of State Chris Kobach, a potential nominee to head the Department of Homeland Security, tells Fox News he doesn't disagree with the president's principle of sending illegal migrants to sanctuary cities, but he says there's a better route.
The best of all possible worlds is to actually hold on to them and then get those immigration judges in en masse down to the border, and then as soon as their asylum claim is denied, put them on a passenger plane back to the home country. Right now what we're doing, we are giving them a six-year ticket, a piece of paper that says, come for your asylum hearing in 6 years. Oh, and by the way, here's a work permit.
A Colorado community marks the 20th anniversary of the attack on Columbine High School, remembering the 13 people killed. Survivor Patrick Ireland was shot twice in the head.
Fortunate that I'm still here and was able to regain so much of my life back.
While Columbine was one of the first school shootings to reach our television screens, it wasn't the last. Each subsequent shooting, from Sandy Hook, Connecticut to Parkland, Florida, has left behind a similar legacy of pain. This is USA Radio News.
being this is a 44 Magnum, the most powerful handgun in the world, and would blow your head clean off, you've got to ask yourself one question. Do I feel lucky?
Okay, people, we're going right back to this great interview. And just in case somebody did tune in late, I would like to remind you, to me, this is one of the most solemn interviews we've had. It's about the 24th anniversary of the Oklahoma City bombing that killed, I think, 168 people there. You know, our younger co-host earlier said, what does it matter? It hasn't been that long ago, really, if it had. And it shows a pattern. If you go all the way back, I mean, I'm going to get too long-winded. But if you go to Waco, if you go to Ruby Ridge, you go to Oklahoma City, there's all a pattern there, man. It's our satanic, evil government has been involved in this stuff all along. And before I go with that, I just want to mention one more thing. And before I go back to Jacob, this guy, we talked about this guy named Michael Hinton. He was in military. He was in the military. He was in the United States federal law enforcement officer for 22 years. I'm sure Pat will remember this. Well, after all, he did the video. He was riding a bus, and he said that he distinctly heard two explosions approximately 7 seconds apart. He said that the blast was so strong, he thought it was going to turn the friggin' bus over. Am I right there, Pat?
Yes. He described on the video how the bus shook. Now, he lived just down the street. He used to catch the bus every morning at right there at the corner. Across the street from the Murrah Building is where he would catch the bus. So that's why he was familiar with the warnings or the alert the previous week. But he also I'm trying to think of the timing now. It's been a long time since he explained this. But he, that morning of the bombing, he was... would not even have been on that bus. He missed his earlier bus and caught this one, and it had just left. Had that bus been late, he might have been standing in front of the building when the front blew out. And by the way, that I just reminded myself, we had an interview after the video of a young man who worked across the street in the Journal Record newspaper building, and his office was on the third floor, and his window was open that morning, and when the blast went off, he got a toy and a small doll flew through his open window across the street in the Journal Record building, obviously from the kid's nursery. Now, if a truck bomb on the street did the damage, how's it going to blow something out the window the other way?
That's right, Pat. And I plead with you people, go pull up General Parton. Read his credentials. You can read the letter he sent to Senator Trent Lott. He went before the Congress. He pleaded for the Congress to do something. But we all know what the Congress is worth. They're worth nothing. But please go pull up the letter. Pull up General Ben Parton. Look at his credentials. Look at the investigation he did in Oklahoma City. Look at the letters he wrote to the Congress and specifically Trent Lott. There's no way on earth you can come away thinking that it was just a truck bomb.
Are you reminding me of Ben Parton? Of course, the trial was put off for a long, long time. It seems like it was 97, I guess, before they finally did a trial. And they unconstitutionally moved it out of Oklahoma, the jurisdiction, into Denver. They had to do that from their perspective once again because there are too many people in Oklahoma that they couldn't get a jury to they couldn't have an honest jury or they're going to lose. McVeigh is going to walk. And plus, the whole scheme is going to be exposed. So they had to get it out of there and get some dumbed-down people in Colorado to sit on the jury because they didn't know what really happened, and they had never heard of General Parton's evidence. Well, so here we are like 2 years later, and Ben and his wife are in Virginia. He lived out just outside of D.C., and he gets a call, and there are three, as I remember, there were three of the defense team that wanted to come visit him. He said, well, sure, come on. So they came over a few days later and spent several hours and morning or afternoon with Ben talking about what he knew. They wanted to know what he knew. And he passed on everything that he passed on to me on the video and that you've seen. I mean, how it was impossible for a truck bomb to have done this and the building was blown from the inside out. And when they were leaving, the last question Ben asked him, he says, well, are you fellows going to call me for trial? And the answer was, well, we don't know. It depends on what Beth says. Beth was the United States attorney, the prosecutor. She's going to tell the defense what witnesses they can call? And so he said, when they told me that, it depends on what Beth has to say. And I knew I wasn't going to be called for trial. So the cover.
You know, Pat, that just is totally mind-boggling. That shows right, you're right there that the fix was in. And I've got one more thing, and I promise you're going to go, Jacob. You mentioned earlier in the interview a guy by the name of Glenn Wilburn. He was a CPA. He had two grandchildren that were killed in the Murrow building. And listen, tell them about how the government, the FBI, came to his house to try to intimidate him. They tried to implicate his 14-year-old son into saying that he looked like, I think, John Doe number 2. Tell them about that. And after, when you get through talking about that, Jacob, I want you to come in, son.
Well, they were actually Glenn's step-grandchildren. His wife was Kathy, and Kathy, from a previous marriage, her daughter was Edie Smith, and Edie was in her young 20s at the time and had these two boys that were in the nursery. And it was on May the 23rd, 34 days after the bombing, actually was my first trip to the city to witness and report on the demolition of the building. And one of my proudest reporting moments was talking to a national audience of a few million people at 7:05 that morning on May the 23rd. I had the pleasure of saying, as the building came down, there goes the evidence. And I'm sure I'm the only reporter in America that said that. But the Edie Smith was on the street that day, and she became angry. When they brought the building down, she knew they were covering up evidence, and CNN got a hold of her on camera, and boy, did she let go with both barrels. And her final thing after, and her rampage and rant was, and I want to know where the hell was the ATF. And that, of course, made big-time national news because she was live on camera. They couldn't edit that. And she, in turn, there were literally thousands upon thousands of letters. And at the video, you saw the stack of mail that Kathy showed me. And the letters were addressed to the red-headed woman in Oklahoma City who lost her two boys. And they would send several of the letters mentioned that the funds were enclosed. Please take this. We're sorry for your loss. And Kathy is showing me the letters there that you saw at the end of the video, all stacked up, and they were all directed by the post office to the Red Cross because they didn't know. They knew that Red Cross would know what to do with this. So every letter to Kathy or the red-headed woman or Edie Smith, Glenn Wilburn, every letter addressed to them was dropped off by the Red Cross, but everyone had been opened, and the funds that were enclosed, that were mentioned as being enclosed, had been taken by the Red Cross.
That's right. You don't get any lower than that.
That's right.
Jacob, you there, Jacob?
I'm here.
Oh, I'm sorry, Jacob. I've got 1,000 questions, but listen, I could go on for a month with this stuff. So you come on in and ask Pat some of the questions you have, son. And thank you for hanging out.
Well, Jacob, did we get your previous one covered about they were kind of training for 911, and even though they probably hadn't decided what they were training for? But also, let us not forget that July of 96, just prior to the Olympics, was the shoot down of TWA 800. And that was another giant cover-up. There are over 700, and I think it was 23 or some, over 700 witnesses on Long Island saw the missile come up from the ocean, probably from the naval ship, probably an accidental shooting, but nevertheless, it was a U.S. missile that brought down that plane, and 700-plus witnesses attested to it, and no one was ever allowed to go on record. The FBI took their statements and left it there. So, that's another giant cover-up. They were learning what they could get away with. So, go ahead. What's your next question?
Well, to answer your question, yes, sir, you certainly did. That's very fascinating stuff. Anyone who hasn't looked into this yet and hasn't done their due diligence on this yet is certainly getting a treat tonight, you know, with all this excellent content on it. So another question I had for you that I wanted to present here, just to kind of bring out some more discussion of this. Those of us who study these things know that the U.S. has a very long, I'd say illustrious, but that's probably a poor choice of words, history of false flag terrorism spanning all the way back to the 1800s, which, sure. I mean, a particular event of that, you've actually written yet another book on The Great Escape of John Wilkes Booth. But, well, when we get back, I'd like you to answer where you would rank the OKC bombing on the scale of this history of false flag bombing.
Well, folks, we'll be right back. You heard Jacob sign off, but just in case you didn't, we'll be right back after this break.
Attention Liberty News Radio listeners. Hard-hitting talk radio has never been and never will be supported by the mainstream in America. Hard-hitting talk radio is taking on the mainstream press like never before. News the networks refuse to use is one of the best ways to educate people. We invite all liberty-loving Americans to join with us to restore the principles of our founding fathers and God, family, and country in the media and our lives. Please help spread the liberty message with your generous donation. You can go online at libertynewsradio.com right now and make a donation online. Or call 801-756-9133 and make a donation over the phone. That's libertynewsradio.com and 801-756-9133. Make a donation today.
As the United States boldly stepped forward in the glorious light provided by its new Constitution in 1787, the nations of the earth were in awe of the newfound strength and hope of this free land. Today, the nation stands at a crossroads. A divergence from the original intent put forth in the United States Constitution has brought grave threats to our beloved nation. A miracle is needed if the United States is to survive. That miracle is again the pure application of the United States Constitution. I'm Scott Bradley. In my To Preserve the Nation book and lecture series, I bring forth truths that will help raise up a new generation of statesmen like those noble Americans who founded this land. Vigorous application of these principles will invigorate and restore the nation, and we may become again the freest, most prosperous, most respected, and happiest nation on earth. Visit topreservethenation.com to begin that restoration.
Okay, girls, about finished with your lesson on money?
Daddy, what is a buy-sell spread for gold coins?
Well, when you sell a gold coin to a coin shop that's worth, say, $1,200, you don't actually get $1,200. But don't worry, we're members of UPMA now, so we don't have to worry about that.
Daddy, what if somebody steals our gold?
We don't have any gold at the house. It's stored safely in the UPMA vault, securely and insured.
But the S&P 500 outperformed gold. Daddy, gold is a bad investment.
Some people do think of it that way. But actually, gold is money. And as members of the United Precious Metals Association, we can use our gold at any store, just like a credit card. Or I can ask them to drop it right into Mommy and Daddy's bank account, because we're a UPMA member family.
Find out more at upma.org. That's upma.org.
Hey, I'm just an old chunk of coal.
Oh, yeah. Oh, hello, everybody. This is Lee Eddy's taking a break, and I just want to get... He's coming, but we'll go on with our guest. Pat, you can... Jacob, go ahead and go, Jacob.
Okay, thanks, Lee. Okay. Well, yeah, Pat, I believe I was... it's hard to break off a thought midstream like that. Let's see. I was just saying, commenting on... With the U.S.'s long history of false flag terrorism spanning all the way back to the 1800s, which you know you've certainly devoted a great deal of your journalism career to exposing stuff like that, and some of that even from the 1800s with that book you did on John Wilkes Booth and everything. I think it would be interesting, for the sake of discussion here, just if you could possibly comment for us on where you would rank the OKC bombing in significance in this long history we're talking about of false flag operations in the U.S.
Well, depending on what department you mean, but as far as pulling it off and deceiving the American people, there's never been anyone any better. JFK assassination was probably the biggest, and it took years and years for the cover-up to blow up in their faces, and of course today they can't admit it. But you know, that case has been solved for 40 years or so. I mean, we all know what happened, who was behind it, and the shots from the front and everything else. But, and you know, in the same with 9/11, another one that comes in is a birth certificate. There are certain things that I don't care how much evidence we private investigators present to the enemy, they can never afford to admit that they killed their own president. They can never admit that they blew up the Murrah building and killed 169 people. And yes, 168 was official. But Eddie, don't forget the missing leg, the leg that was found later in the debris. There was 169. Nobody ever could fit that leg on any other body. But nevertheless, These are the things they can, to which they can never admit. They can, I don't care how much evidence we get. The birth certificate is unmentionable. You cannot talk about the birth certificate. I'm talking about Hannity and Rush Limbaugh. If you want to get shut off the air real fast, just give them a call. And of course, the woman screens you and says, you know what he want to talk about. But if you make
they coined their own derogatory term for people who were raising questions about the birth certificate. You know, they would sneeringly call us birthers.
Okay. Well, my point is there are certain crimes that they have committed that they can never fess up to. They lie about all of them. And they have great cover stories that they often get away with because, once again, with the ability to print money, they own the news media. Now, when you own the news media and you own the investigative agency, you got total control of the people. You can dumb them down with any kind of phony evidence that you want to present, and your lackeys at the TV seats report it for you. Just like Hoppy Heidelberg told me, he was learning more about the Oklahoma City bombing on the evening news and the morning paper than he was sitting in the grand jury room.
You know, they compromise those people too, Pat. They get those people probably. We had a guy named Officer Jim Rothstein on our show. He's a Catholic. He's not Jewish. He comes on our show. He was a New York cop and worked with all levels of government, you know, the state, the county of New York. Oh, you know, well, you know, he said that probably a conservative estimate of the Congress, he said at least a third of them, probably more, have been compromised. They're pedophiles and drug addicts and, you know, and just, you name it, gun runners. But most of them, they're probably pedophiles. But, yeah, they've been gay compromised.
I know we're coming down to the end of the hour. I've got a couple of pieces to tell you on that subject. It might be as good a closing a factor that we can come up with. One is, when I visited in January 96, Hoppy Heidelberg and I, by that time, had become such good friends, he was inviting me to sleep at his house whenever he came to town. I stayed in his guest room. Yeah, I was one of the few journalists that he would trust. So consequently, he and I got to know each other real well, and we stay up late at night and talked about a lot of things. And by the way, Hoppy was pretty well educated on the subjects that you and I know about then before he ever went on that grand jury, which was in January. He'd been sitting there since January. But here we are in October, and they kick him off. Well, in January of 96, I'm out there. He says, I'm going to tell you something, and you can report it, but not yet. Don't report it yet. But here, I'm going to tell you a story. He had gotten a call from an attorney in downtown Oklahoma City, and he said, I have a message for you, but I don't want to give it on the phone. I want to come see you. Hoppy said, fine. He had a farm, a ranch, I should say. He was a horse breeder, and he had a ranch in Blanchard, Oklahoma, about half an hour drive outside southwest of Oklahoma City. And the hour or so later, the attorney shows up. He knocks on the door. Hoppy says, hi, come on in. He said, no, I'd rather not come in. He was concerned about recording devices or what might be inside. He said, I wish you'd come out here and talk with me. So Hoppy's a pretty tough old cowboy. He didn't have much fear of anyone. And they went out in the driveway, and he said, I just wanted to tell you that they told me to tell you that if you don't sue, they'll let you live. Now, That is the sort of tactics they stoop to. In the same vein, 2 or 3 years later,
wow,
Hoppy and Charles Key are driving to Dallas. They're going down there. They're talking about the Oklahoma City bombing. There's some group down there. And Charles picked him up at Blanchard, and they headed out to the interstate, and they headed down I-35 there. And Hoppy said, by the way, I want to ask you something, because Charles had kind of changed his tune in recent months, and he began to use the government official line about this busted sting operation. You know, the ATF wanted to say that the reason they weren't in the building because they were out stalking. They had a sting operation going, waiting for the truck. They knew the McVeigh was coming to town. Just total baloney. But they began to call it a busted sting operation. And next thing we know, Charles Key is talking about a busted sting operation. And we had heard it on video. We'd heard him on some radio shows and interviewed. And I suppose somebody had probably written about it as well. But this had been going on for too long. And so Hoppy had him alone in the car. And he said, by the way, Charles, he said, how come you keep talking about this busted sting operation? You know dang well it wasn't any busted sting operation. The bombs were inside the building. General Parton proved that to all of us. Why do you start saying that? Charles looked at him and sheepishly and said, because they told me if I didn't back off, I'm going to start seeing my kids' pictures on the milk cartons.
You know what? That I got to chime in here. That really burns me, man. You know what? I'll say to that, that road goes both ways. If you know what? People start threatening me. You know, that crap, yes, sir, that goes both ways. I would not put up with that crap. You know what? That's all I'll say right now.
Yeah.
But before we run out of time, and the people at Lomi, they know what the hell I'm talking about. But and we have, you know what? We don't have enough people like that talking like that will take action. If we did, this stupid government would not be out of control. But before we run out of time, Pat, I've got to ask you, I guess, a rhetorical question. And it's obvious to me that the government did it. They were in on it. They did it. We all know it. Let's just say it.
Yeah.
How have they gotten by with it so long? How did Eric Holder, who supplied the explosives to Nichols and McVeigh, he gets a promotion? How do they get along with it, that get by with that so long? And will it ever end? Is anything ever going to be done?
Well, because they've been able to get away with it for so long. And, you know, I've been involved in this thing since the Kennedy assassination, although I wasn't a professional writer, but I was an amateur sleuth for 20 years until the Gordon Call case came up. And that's when I was busting open with so much information I had to start writing or I was going to implode. But what goes back to the same basic is that the United States government, Washington, D.C., has been captured for a long, long time. And Satan's agents, you know, I call them Satan's chosen people, have been controlling what goes on up there for much longer than Christian America wants to believe, and they will stoop to all sorts of atrocities. Americans, and especially Christian Americans, cannot imagine the enormity and the evil of our enemy.
That leads to another question. Okay, now, and I know you don't know any more about it than I do, probably. I know what to do, I think. But, Pat, before we go, we're almost out of time. What can we do about that? What can we do about our worthless, lackey, paid-off congressman? What can we do about that?
Get back to lawful money would be the giant step. As long as they've got the printing presses to create. Hey, Obama, in 8 years, went the admitted deficit went from $10 trillion to $20 trillion. He doubled it in 8 years. Well, a lot of that money was spent on buying off congressmen, the undercover operations, moving the guns with Holder down to Mexico, all these sorts of. Listen, when you got unlimited power, money, you got unlimited power. And as Rothschild said a couple of hundred years ago, give me the control of a nation's monetary supply, and I don't care who makes the law.
Well, Pat, we've run out of time. I definitely want to get you back on because you've got we have 1,000 questions about this we can get to. And also, you have other work we want to get to. People, thank you so much for listening in. I hope you have a wonderful, happy Resurrection Day. On the count, for Lee, Jacob, Matt, Gene, Rich, Sam, all the crew, God bless you. Happy Resurrection Day. Please tune in. I'll be here unless I'm killed or dead next week. I'll see y'all back same time, same place. God bless you. Have a happy Easter.